Did you know that over 60,000 new tracks are uploaded to Spotify every single day? That's a new track every 1.4 seconds, and that's just on one platform. With so much music now available, it's more important than ever to stand out from the crowd. So it's not surprising that more artists are starting to use less conventional sonic textures in their music, like field recordings. Perhaps you've always wanted to infuse the sounds of nature or your favourite city into your own tracks, but not having the right gear or knowledge might have held you back. Well, if that's the case, you're going to love the brand new guide I just created teaching you how to start field recording with just a smartphone, and it's all yours for free at femalediymusician.com/learnwithisabel. Yep, you really do just need a humble smartphone and some minimal extra gear that doesn't have to break the bank to get started with field recording. And I've laid it all out in this handy 5-point checklist. So download it for free at femalediymusician.com/learnwithisabel and elevate your music to the next level.
My real intention with this is that I wanted partly to be able to just give it to my daughter, which I've done. And also then I want it to move people. So, you know, touch somebody's heart, help them with their catharsis, like help someone have a cry or like give someone a bit of hope.
Hello again, knob twiddlers, and welcome to another episode of Girls Twiddling Knobs. Now, I hope you're feeling all autumnal as the seasons change, and if you're listening in from the southern hemisphere, I hope spring feels good over there too. Now, you might have been wondering what the beautiful music was that you heard just then at the beginning of this episode. Well, every so often, as a teacher, one of your students shares something with you that truly takes your breath away. And that's exactly what happened when I first heard today's guest, Asha McCarthy's new album, Epitaph, which you just heard a little bit of, dear listener. Asha recorded, produced, and mixed the album from her home after completing my digital course, Home Recording Academy. But it wasn't just the fact that Asha had produced something of such technical quality and delicacy that filled me with joy. It was also the sheer depth of emotion and meaning within every single track. Epitaph actually emerged from Asha's experience of birth trauma and is dedicated to her daughter as a result. And this life-changing experience, while incredibly challenging, was one of the catalysts that helped Asha drop the perfectionism that had been holding her back with her music for years. This and some other key things that Asha shares inside this episode enabled her to finally create and share this beautiful album with the world. So if you listened to my episode last week about not waiting for the experts to come along, today's conversation with Asha really does show that the proof is in the pudding. This album had to be made by her, and inside she shares how she found the tools and the self-belief to do it. Okay, let's not waste another minute. Let's meet Asha. Okay, so Asha, welcome to Girls Twiddling Knobs. It is such a pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I'm really glad that you're here because, I mean, you have a stunning album, Epitaph, that we're going to be talking about, which I love already. And it hasn't even, well, as we're recording, it hasn't even been released.
Yeah.
But it has been released now when you're listening. But I also am really glad you're here because you are going to speak on something that I think so many of the listeners will relate to, which is perfectionism. Mm. And you have really good firsthand experience of how when you are able to overcome that and just put it to one side, for at least some period of time, you're able to actually get your work out. And what you've done is made something truly beautiful. So I'm really glad that people are going to be able to hear that story as well.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Well, what I'd love you to do first, Asha, is just introduce the listeners to who you are, how you got into music, and the kind of music that you love to make.
Okay. Yeah, it's quite a long story, so I'll try and keep it kind of short. But I've always been into music, and I learned the cello from quite a young age and the piano. And I did classical music. I went to music school in Manchester. I went to Cheetham's and did classical cello. And I then kind of went in a slightly different direction. And I went to Dartington and did more contemporary music. And then I've always been really interested in North Indian classical music, and eventually ended up studying in Delhi with my teacher there, Saskia Rao Dahas. And so I've kind of been through these classical traditions quite and taken them quite seriously, and been done lots of practice. And when I came back to England, I really felt a little bit at sea of like where to go with my music. And I've always done lots of different things, so mainly doing session work and playing with other people, and I ran a choir, so I just had all these like little different musical influences in my life. But I've always been writing music. I've always been writing songs and composing, and it's taken me a really long time to believe in it enough to be like, okay, actually I'm not going to only play on other people's work, I'm going to also do something that's mine. And that I think has influences from all these different things in it. But it's taken me a really long time to get to that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think so many people deal with that, where it does take such a long time to realize that you have something to say, mm-hmm. you know, and what you have to say is valid.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that all the things that you did over your career have been so helpful in learning and developing skills through playing with other people.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I also for a long time had this thing to do with perfectionism as well, that I really, really wanted to like be a classical cellist. And then I really wanted to do Indian classical music and be, you know, performing with that all the time. And actually I do also want to do those things still too, but there was always a part of me that wanted to make something different and make something that was just creativity from me. And it's definitely been influenced by all of those things. Yeah, definitely.
Mm. And with regards to, you know, twiddling knobs, as we're on Girls Twiddling Knobs.
Yeah.
obviously you had that really kind of like thorough classical training, and like you say, in lots of different ways. But were you using technology at all in your performing or writing? Were you recording?
I was not recording. I did a lot of recording in studios with other people, and I did a lot of recording my own things into the computer's internal microphone in GarageBand.
Yeah.
And like layering harmonies and just getting really excited about it, but having no idea how to make it sound with any quality to it, just for fun, you know? And so I really liked playing around with it, but I never shared it with anyone. And it was mainly just like a little fun thing that I did. And it all felt, the kind of idea of actually learning how to do something properly really felt a bit overwhelming. And I just didn't think it was for me. But I also couldn't quite imagine recording with somebody else producing it, because I just had a very clear idea of how I would want my music to sound. And I would want to shape every bit of it. Mm. I wouldn't want to hand any bit over, but.
Yeah.
So I felt quite stuck with that for a long time.
Yeah, it's a really good point, because I think obviously everyone's different, and there are some people who they just want to know how to make a demo, and then they really want to go into a studio and be able to work with a producer, but work with a producer well. And then there's other people who want to do the whole process, you know, and then there's some people in the middle. But I totally get what you mean, where you can be in that really frustrating position. You don't know how to make something sound professional. You don't know how to kind of get all the pieces to fit together, but you know that you have the potential to do something really cool if, you know, with your vision. Yeah. And that's so, And on the one hand, that's so exciting because when you do start playing around, like you're talking about, even just with the internal mic and GarageBand on a laptop, it is so exciting because you start to get those little seeds, you know, you're like, oh, wow, this is reverb, or wow, this is panning, or, you know, whatever it is. But then, you don't want to hand it over to somebody else. You know, you're like, oh, I've had a taste of what this could feel like.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of the way that I was making when I was doing that, years back, like just like playing around, I think I was writing a lot of stuff like that. So like I'd record something, I'd be like, oh, what does this sound like? I'll just record this, you know, and it was all really spontaneous and the whole process was just very like instant. And I, you know, sometimes if you're in a studio and somebody's engineering, they're behind the glass and you're writing a part and you say, actually, I'm just going to change that harmony there to this. And there's a lot of communication that like happens in order to make something happen. Whereas if it's just you on your own, you just do it all. You can kind of, I just found it easier to just do it myself.
Yeah, that's so liberating, isn't it? You're like, well, I don't have to communicate through a glass window, like you say, with headphones.
And
depending on who you're working with as well, I don't have to negotiate whether they think it's a good idea as well. Cool. That's really good to know, you know, how you were using it before. And then I'd also love to know, how would you describe your music? I mean, we're going to hear some of your new album anyway on this episode, but can you just describe in your own words, what is this new album in terms of the textures or what you do currently?
It's funny because this is all songs from about 3 years ago. And it's amazing. I've just realized like, this is how long it's taken to get this into a fit state, you know, to put out there. And yeah, so actually now what I'm writing is quite different, but I think this album is really, I mean, the sonically it's kind of folky. It's got mainly acoustic instruments. There's definitely an influence of, like Irish folk music. I think of like that type of singing and, but lots of strings, lots of cellos. There's some quite lush moments and some of it's quite sparse. I'm not quite sure if that's the right way to describe it, but I see it as quite a kind of folky sound. Although there's a few things in there that are slightly different.
Yes. And again, that's the beauty of when you produce yourself, isn't it? That you can sort of add little twists and, you know, little shimmers of other things that still feel really authentic to you and you can really get your personality across.
Exactly.
We're going to talk about the album properly in a minute, but I just really want to know, because I know there'll be people struggling with this listening to this episode, how did perfection manifest for you as a musician, Asha? How was it holding you back, do you think?
So I think there's just little different strands in it for me, different strands of the within the perfectionism, but a big thing is that I just didn't start. Like it was, I had this idea of this music and it was like in my head and these textures and this kind of like big musical picture. And I kind of couldn't quite bear the steps that it would take to get there, or the steps of hearing it unfinished and hearing it not quite good enough, or like making mistakes and like the natural learning process. Definitely I have that a lot in my life, but and there's kind of good things about that to hold like the possibility of something that's really epic and really exciting and to help you kind of see what you want the finished product to be like, but definitely that can stop me from even starting because it feels like a massive mountain. And I think actually something you said on the course, I know we'll talk about that a bit later, but something you said, which I just, it's been like really important for me, is perfectionism is the enemy of done. And I was like, yeah. And when I heard that, I was like, oh my goodness, I can sum up so much of my life in general. Just it's like procrastination, isn't it? It's this sort of like, there's a lot of fear and there's lots of kind of things psychologically inside that.
I think that's such a good point that when you start, it's interesting how when you start unpicking your relationship with music, you do start seeing all these patterns across the rest of your life. And I know it's something we talk about in Home Recording Academy because you know, I feel like we really have to, as women, understand why we're getting in our own way so much. And, but I think you're right that it's this such a delicate balance of, on the one hand, being ambitious, like believing or dreaming, you know, so that you can make these wonderful, epic, amazing masterpieces, or even just projects that truly express who you are, but then not getting paralyzed by the sheer magnitude of that.
Yeah, definitely.
That balance is so hard, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think there's a good thing in the perfectionist voice, of even like the critical kind of side of it, is like there's some really good information in not criticizing yourself, but like listening carefully with open ears and being like, okay, no, that's not actually the best that I can do on that. And I think definitely for me, definitely with classical music, I learned that in how I learned to practice is like, yeah, really do pick it apart to get better and learn what's going wrong and kind of investigate. And there's like a real powerful thing in that that helps you then kind of get better and better. But personally, it's great. I can kind of see that in classical music, that people get this striving for excellence and this striving for like virtuosity on their instrument. And it can end up in these incredible places. But I think personally, the way my mind is, I can get a bit like, it's not that healthy for me sometimes. I just really need a break from that, because there's a bit of a like meanness in the way that myself talk can be quite mean. So instead of just saying, oh no, we can do that a bit better, I start kind of really getting down on myself about not doing it well enough, you know?
Yeah.
And that's when it becomes really unhelpful. And I've definitely gone through that a few times of not being nice to myself about it.
Yeah, I think that's so relatable. And I think so many people struggle with that. And it's that difference between, like you say, saying, okay, I could do that better. And so next time I will change this, this, and this, as opposed to, I could have done that better. And the reason I didn't do that better is because I'm crap.
Yeah.
Or exactly. I'm, you know, like it starts becoming all about your identity, not just that one time you performed, or that one time you sat down at the laptop to record something, or, you know, it becomes, I will always be crap at this.
Yeah.
Who am I kidding? I'm this awful, you know, amateur, et cetera, et cetera. And it becomes so all or nothing and so black and white, as opposed to that one instance, I wasn't able to get that, you know, exactly how I wanted it. So this is what I'll do next time. Such a different way of talking to yourself, but so easy to fall into the trap of really being quite mean.
Yeah.
Bit of a bitch to ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's like, it's in the culture as well. I think it is there about like, I definitely heard in when I was learning, you know, like as a teenager in classical music, like definitely was told at one point, you're only as good as the last note you played.
Oh God.
And I was like, it's just a pressure. Like what a pressure. Yeah.
That's actually even worse than what I was, you know, when I was told, what I was told growing up, and especially as the early 20s, you're only good as the last gig you've played, but you're only as good as the last note you've played. Wow. So
every note has to be, which, you know, it's, if you can hold that lightly, it's great, but I definitely couldn't. I definitely found that just real, really, really a lot of pressure. Yeah.
An
made me be less kind with my self-talk. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, you know, like you're saying with classical music, there is obviously this such an amazing strive for excellence, which is, you know, I massively respect, but there's also quite rigid ideas about what's good and bad, what's right and wrong, what success and failure is. And I think you get that across music, but particularly classical music, because it's got such a tradition and such a framework and language. I don't know. What do you think about that, Asha? Was that your experience as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's hard to tell whether that was the pressure I put on myself or whether that was in the culture, but I think it's a bit of both. Definitely. Yeah. And also when I studied Indian classical music, it's similar, like really, really hundreds of year tradition, very, very right, definite rights and wrongs. And I think doing my own music is quite freeing, because it's like actually just what do I like the sound of right now, and defining for myself what I want to, how I want to sound, which is really the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's great that you've got that background, because obviously now you can take from that as much as you want. You have that discipline. Mm-hmm. But now, like you say, you have that, you're liberated through your skills and, you know, composition, recording, production, to make a sound that's all your own.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Okay, well then therefore it feels natural to talk about the album then, because obviously this is what has, or what I would love to know is how did you therefore, Asha, make the album? Because, you know, we've talked about all the ways that perfectionism was really getting in the way. How did you get over that?
Yeah, with difficulty.
Yeah,
it's a process. And I mean, I'm making it like, I don't know, sort of 20 years after I started writing songs. So it's been like, I really have, you know, I haven't fully got over it. And it's going to, you know, it's there in every decision that you make. There's all these voices of like, want, you know, genuinely wanting to get it better, feeling a bit mean towards yourself for not being, you know, good enough in quotes. Yeah. But I think it's just building up this other side, like being good enough and just trying and having a go and just say, you know, whatever you do is valid. Like it's, there's this other side, other beliefs that I also believe. Yes. And they've just got stronger and stronger, I think.
Oh, I love that, Asha. That's such a good way of talking about it, that, you know, sometimes I think people think it's either or. You're either, you know, crippled by these perfectionist thoughts, or you then overcome it and they're gone and you're a different person. But in reality, there's multiple narratives going on at the same time. You know, you have a belief of, I'm just, you know, I'm awful because I got that thing wrong. But you also have a belief of, no, that's bollocks. That was one thing. And actually all the things you've done over your career, you're a great musician. You know, like you can hold both those beliefs at the same time.
Yeah. And I think I also realized with the recording that there's parts of my life where I'm really quite lazy, you know, like my car is like a total mess all the time. And I'm always like, oh, I must tidy the car. And like just things where like I'm really happy to be sloppy and like just to harness a bit of that sloppiness, although not too much, because I can also be like that. I've realized I can also be like that with music, where I'm just like, yeah, it's good enough when it's not. And like, just kind of harnessing bits of those things from different areas of your life and bringing it all to the recording. Finding the sloppiness and kind of be sloppy about that.
Yeah, like, yeah, again, it's kind of like making it your own space, making it your own process rather than a rigid right or wrong framework. So if you've been writing songs for the last 20 years, what is it about the last year to 3 years that's meant you've now finished an album?
I think it's a number of things. I think definitely doing the course, doing the Home Recording Academy, that was definitely for like having the skills and believing that I could make something, you know, make the recordings, like the actual audio files, be the right quality. I think that was huge.
That's awesome.
And I think a lot of other things to do with it was probably like time. I had a baby 3 years ago and I've suddenly realized, wow, I have so little time. And I also, I don't know if this is the right moment to talk about it, but I had quite a traumatic birth with her and really faced what I thought was going to be the end of my life on the day she was born. And it was quite a shock and I had quite a lot of trauma afterwards. But one thing that it really, really shook, it sort of shook into me like, wow, I really want to leave something behind, because it kind of made, it made me meet the idea that like, I'm going to die. We're all going to die at some point. And obviously I knew that, but like, it's, to feel it a bit stronger and be like, okay, actually I don't want to coast along and there's something I want to do. And I've been wanting to do it for a long time and I've just not done it. And also this particular album, that's why it's called Epitaph as well, was like, if I was going to leave a child without a mother, you know, if that happened, like I would want to give her some of my music, some of the lullabies I've written for her and some of these things that, so it really started as just like, I just want to record the lullabies I'm singing to her. And then I started building on it a bit, but yeah, it's a lot to do with my daughter basically.
That's of course so beautiful, Asha.
Yeah, I've spent 3 years going like, why didn't I do this before? I've got no time now. Why am I trying to do this now? Like, it's absurd.
You know, like, it's such a common thing that I hear from people that have had children, you know, had babies and they're musicians, and that once the time has gone, you know, once you have hardly any time,
yeah,
then you're like, oh God, I've really got to do this. And what was I doing with all that time beforehand?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. At the same time, it's almost irrelevant, because the point is that you're doing it now.
Mm.
And obviously this, you needed to go through whatever that process was, and you know, this is the right time to do it. And what's happened is, you know, you've created a piece of work which is really meaningful because of that experience of giving birth and, you know, being faced with the idea of not being around anymore for that, your daughter. And, you know, that's brought out this incredibly meaningful piece of work.
Mm. Yeah. And I think, yeah, to be honest, actually, also with the perfectionism, this has kind of killed off a bit of the perfectionism as well, that experience. And also having little time has made me just practically be like, okay, that's finished. I've just got to let it go now. I can't keep twiddling with it forever. And things, yeah, it has made me be a bit more, just get it done.
So in terms of like overcoming that perfectionism, one of the things was being able to hold, like grow those voices that were more supportive to you, mm-hmm. those internal voices that were more caring, supportive, encouraging, and about making music as opposed to not like stopping you making music.
Yeah.
Having them kind of have a louder voice than the other voices, even though those voices haven't gone away. And I think that's important. If anyone's listening, it's okay if those perfectionist voices never go away.
Mm.
It's fine. It's about being able to see them for what they are and kind of put them over there for a bit while you get on and actually do your music.
Yeah.
So that was one thing. And then another thing was coming on Home Recording Academy and being part of that process and that community and thinking about all these ideas about perfection, because we look at that a lot in the course anyway. Mm. And then another thing was facing that life-changing experience of having your daughter, but staring death in the face and realizing I actually may not have as much time. You know, I've been coasting and I've been getting in my own way, and I want to leave something for her, and I want to leave something that really shows her who I am and, you know, really communicates, I guess, how I feel for her as well.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You've said it really, really well.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. No, it's so, I love hearing why people make music, you know, because it's, and I love hearing also why a lot of women make music, because I truly believe that there's a lot of female stories that don't get heard in conventional music environments like the radio and Spotify playlists and things, because so many women just feel like they don't have the skills and they don't have the confidence to put their music out and record it and produce it and all that stuff. So I think the fact that you're able to tell that story of what you've gone through, Asha, is so important. Mm. And I know there'll be people listening to this podcast right now who've gone through something similar, even if it's not exactly the same, and they will totally get it and be so glad that someone else is putting it into words and music for them.
Yeah, that's also what I hope with it is, I definitely wrote it first for my daughter, but I think as I was writing more and more about it, there's one song about like parenting during lockdown and also just feeling like, wow, there's a lot of people with similar stories out there, and I want to put something out that's soothing and might kind of de-escalate some of that pain and trauma and for other people.
Yeah, totally. Well, maybe we could talk a little bit about the process of making Epitaph. So we kind of know a bit about the backstory, but how did you go about building up this record?
The first song was I did Drift, which is the first one on the album, and during Home Recording Academy we were working on like recording something, so we'd done it stage by stage, and I loved the whole process of learning the kind of getting the roots right, like getting all the kind of everything right about the technique of, you know, setup and everything. That was just a relief, because then I knew that everything I was building on top of that was on a good foundation. So I did, and I think it was supposed to be something where we start kind of like with a few layers and really, really get that right. And I immediately couldn't do that. I was just like so excited. I kind of went for like ridiculous, like glockenspiel and like just getting all this stuff
right,
on.
I love it.
Yeah, so I went a bit wild with it and it became this quite like unwieldy thing that this was the first track and I had some help from I sent it to a friend and it was the first time I'd kind of shared anything I'd recorded really with somebody.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was quite nervous about it. And and a very supportive friend gave me like lots of really, really helpful kind of like feedback included in like support.
Because that's actually something we talk about in the course, isn't it, Ash? Like how you get feedback and how you choose the person or the people that you share your music with and why you're asking for feedback and all that stuff, because it's so important.
Yeah.
But it's also, it has to be the right person. It has to be for the right reasons.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that helped you then refine what you were doing.
Exactly, yeah. And then I started doing some other songs as well. And I think that was the one that even towards the end of the whole EP, that was the whole album, that was still kind of like, I was still trying to tame it, like quite late in the process. And then I did a lot of it myself. And then I recorded it at home, usually when my daughter was like doing something with her dad, or all of the editing and mixing I did after bedtime when she was asleep, or she used to have naps, so I did a little bit when she was napping, but I did a lot of it when she was asleep. And it was my kind of like wind down at the end of the day and fun creative thing to do after kind of being in a bit of a kind of hard slog parenting in lockdown, you know.
I love that you say that actually, Asha, because I think that a lot of people, if they maybe haven't done or they don't feel very confident recording, they presume that it's always going to be stressful. But actually, once you get a hang of the basics and you've got your stuff recorded and it's inside your door and you start to feel a bit more confident about kind of editing and using effects and stuff, it can actually be really therapeutic.
Yeah.
It can be really meditative even. Like I find it very relaxing depending on what kind of deadline I've got.
I think I had no pressure on it. So it was just really, really creative and exactly like that, just fun. And I think it was really in some ways not sensible. And there was a point where I had to stop doing it in the evenings because I was really finding it hard to stop and going to bed too late and then waking up early. And it wasn't really sustainable. So I was trying to do it I did it in smaller bits, but there was definitely one evening where I kind of stayed up till about midnight, like playing with synth sounds and like making these like interacting synths that were like bending around each other. And like, I got up in the morning and I went to bed thinking like, I am a genius. You know, like, this is amazing. Like, no one's going to believe how good this is. And I listened in the morning and it was just terrible. It was like Ross from Friends. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was like...
Love it.
And I think someone else on the course said that as well. Like, oh, she had a Ross from Friends moment. I definitely had that. Like, yeah. So actually some of the decisions I was making when I was tired weren't good.
But it just goes to show though how much fun you can have, and that even if you know that in that particular experiment didn't work out, you will have learned so much stuff about even just how to use a synth sound, how to start playing around with that, you know. And that is how we learn, is by, you know, sometimes it's through just playing and having fun. And it's okay if it doesn't all sound amazing.
I did a lot of it in the in the living room, and then at the last stages I took it to be mastered and with Lucas Drinkwater, who's just fantastic, and he's got a lovely studio, and he at the end, the final process, he helped with some of the final mixing, because there was somewhere I had just got a bit overwhelmed by the mix and I'd listened to it too much and I needed other ears really on it.
And then
also being there with him, watching him do things and talking about different decisions and stuff, actually that really also helped me to learn a lot. He was definitely the final part of the process and made it sound very lush, that mastering process.
Mastering is so important for that, and obviously, you know, the mix feeds into that so much too. I mean, how does it feel now, Asha, looking back and realizing that you have produced and recorded yourself And mixed, largely mixed it yourself as well.
Yeah.
This album, which is such high quality. Like, it's so good.
Oh, thank you.
And I really hope you know that.
Yeah.
But how does that feel? Like, is that something you could have believed you would have done 6 months ago?
Yeah, it's in some ways a bit unbelievable. And yet, like, now also I also had this kind of mystique about the process, and now I've done it, I also look back and I think, like, yeah, okay, I can see all the stages that went into that and all of this music that I was listening to, thinking, like, oh my god, that's just amazing quality, like, how would anyone ever get that? And like, now I can kind of, it's demystified it a bit, where I'm like, okay, I know how that sound was made, or yeah, I can understand the decisions that have been taken to get to that point. And yeah, so the fact that I've done it myself, it feels a bit unbelievable, but also I've demystified it for myself, and course and all sorts of this process has, really.
Yeah. And it's amazing, isn't it? When you learn something and you look back and it's so hard to put yourself back in that place where you didn't know it.
Mm.
You know, it's so hard to remember when you didn't know it, because now you know it.
Yeah.
And now, like you say, you understand, you've broken down all those stages.
Mm.
And I think that's hopefully very encouraging for anyone listening to this episode, that if you are looking at the idea of recording and producing your own music, even if you feel like, oh, this just feels like this absolutely overwhelming, massive mess of a process that I have no idea what it is, there will be a point, if you put the time in and you believe in yourself, there will be a point where you look back like you are, Asha, and saying, well, actually now, it makes total sense.
Mm.
You know, I know what all these decisions are. I know the process, and there's always more to learn. That's one of the great things about it. But I think that's a very important thing for people to listen to and take on if they're doubting whether they could feel like that ever.
Yeah. And I think also, I might not have said it, but just throughout that process, I definitely had those moments of being completely overwhelmed. And there's, I don't know if you, there's that song Epitaph Part 2, and it's really quite simple most of the way through. And then at the end, I was like, I want it to be epic. And I had all these different layers coming in, and I just got lost in it for ages. And there was this one vocal harmony that every time I tried to record it, the computer crashed. and it was just on this harmony. I did put other stuff on as well, but it was just this one. And I was just like, all of these beliefs came up, like, computers hate me.
Yes.
And like, I just can't do it. There's something, all of this stuff came up. And like, and that, you know, I had loads of moments like that where I was like really ready to give up with it. And and I think the main thing that I learned from this process, and definitely we talked about that on the course with the mindset, and was just about the mindset towards those moments. And
totally.
Yeah. Just, yeah. This kind of like being inquisitive, trying again, not getting negative self-talk, just leave it. For me, it was also just taking a break. Like, actually, usually that was when I was just getting tired and I needed to stop and come back.
Totally. Totally. I love that you said that, Asha, because it's something that I think is so important. It's something that, like you say, I talk about on the course with everybody, that there will be moments along this journey where you feel like you don't know what you're doing, that you're totally freaked out, that you'll never get your head around it, that you're absolutely exhausted and you're sick of it, and you think, why didn't I just get somebody else to do this for me? There will be those moments. And I think knowing that before you begin on that journey is really important, because then when they come up, they don't surprise you. They don't shake you off for too long. You know that it's just a moment.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
And that's a very important thing. And that's one of the reasons why I think the course promise in Home Recording Academy is so important, because you really, I make everyone write down how they're going to show up in the course, you know, in a way that's going to be supportive. And it kind of prepares you to know that you're going to have to come back to that. You're going to have to keep reinforcing this throughout the process of learning to record and produce.
Mm.
So I really love that you mentioned that, Asha, because I know that throws people off. I know that makes people throw in the towel, when actually all that was happening was they were learning and it just felt uncomfortable.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 And I, looking back, there's all things that I think, like, okay, well, next time I'm going to do this thing differently. But I'm fully expecting that, because I want to then push out more boundaries, like, I'm going to have to meet it again and again. And actually the main thing that got me through this was just that attitude at those moments. And that's the thing to really hold on to.
It really is. Like, I have it all the time. I have it weekly. Mm. I have a moment like that every week. And it's not always about music. Sometimes it's about something else. But I've had loads of moments like that about music, about it's not even just about recording. It could be promoting stuff online, or it could be doing a gig. I think the fact is, the reality is, whenever you do something like music, you are always taking risks in a way, you know, small and big risks, and it's vulnerable. Mm. And so you will hit those moments of feeling like, oh my God, can I do this? Why am I doing this? I hate this. I hate me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah. And you have to just see them as moments.
Yeah. And I think that's those moments where the perfectionism comes in as well. Like I think there's a part of that perfectionism that's just like, I'm really, really uncomfortable with, with like the moments where things aren't going right, and that I feel vulnerable and don't know what to do. And yeah,
totally. Well, it's been so wonderful hearing about Epitaph, and I'm going to link to it in the show notes, obviously.
Thanks.
And I'm really glad that people now know a little bit about the background and the story behind it too, so that when they listen to it, they'll know that it's exploring these ideas. What do you hope for the album? Like, who do you hope it connects with, Asha? And where do you hope it's going to take you, and these new skills might take you in the future?
I think the album, I had a few moments of thinking like, okay, well, oh, I want, you know, I had all these ideas of like what I would like it to be. And actually I've honed it down to thinking, no, my real intention with this is that I wanted partly to be able to just give it to my daughter, which I've done. and also then the main thing is that I want it to move people. So, you know, touch somebody's heart, to make them, you know, help them with their catharsis, like help someone have a cry, or like, or make someone, give someone a bit of hope. Just something about touching people's feelings. That's what I'm hoping for it. And to kind of land in people, for them to listen deeply and hear it. That's what I'm after. Because I had all these ideas of like, oh, I'd really like to, you know, sell this many copies of the album. And it's just a bit arbitrary, actually. And that's not really the reason I made it. And so that's what I'm hoping for it. To reach people that need it, need to hear something like that about those, about that subject.
I think that's a really good point, actually, Asha, because I think when you have a real sense of why you're making music, and obviously, you know, if you're relying on those album sales for your, to pay the rent, that's one thing. And but if you're not, and you're making it, you know, largely because you really have a story to tell, and you want to connect with people about that experience. And I think it helps you to get clearer on what actually does matter. Mm. Is it that you sell 500 copies, or is it that 10 people listen to it and feel less alone?
Mm.
So that's a really, really good point to make.
Yeah.
And also, I noticed on your website that you're now offering things like recording remotely on other people's projects.
I feel now that I can do it more, do a whole string arrangement, and you know, and then send them the stems and things like that, that are just more more advanced. And I also feel more confident to say that that's what I do, because I know now what I need to do for that to make it the right quality. So yeah
that's really exciting.
Yeah, and I really enjoy that. And I also would love to record things for other people, and sort of get into producing a bit more later, further down the line. But yeah,
I think that's really exciting, because I think a lot of women, even me, don't think about putting themselves out like that. You know, like, I will produce other people, and I will offer that as a service to other people. And that's a very, very cool thing, because I think more women could benefit from recording with other women, you know?
Yeah.
And just having that choice.
And that's partly, I think partly why I wanted to do it myself as well, is just, I've been in lots of studios, and over the years, I've never been in a studio with a female engineer or producer, which I just thought was like, really, like, that's quite mad, actually. That's quite crazy for such a long, you know, so many experiences to have that percentage of no representation. And and that was definitely putting me off, because I'm quite shy about singing. I definitely, it would need to be a really particular kind of relationship that I have with that person to feel really comfortable sing in front of them and to try different things out and try, you know.
Yes.
And I don't know how much that's gender, but I think the atmosphere in some studios doesn't feel kind of conducive to that. So in the future, maybe.
That sounds really good. Well, lastly, I just wanted to ask, because obviously you've gone through Home Recording Academy and it's been a part of you. It sounds like a big part of you being able to make this album, and not just from the technical point of view, but the mindset point of view too. Mm. And I wondered if you could share with the podcast listeners, what are the three biggest takeaways from the program for you?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, there's lots in it. I think there was one of the really early modules about listening that was great. I think that listening to it, particularly, like, there was lots of different listening exercises that we did, but one of them was listening to specific tracks and listening for, you know, the textures, what instruments are there, what are the effects being used, and just like listening a bit more critically, like what's actually happening. And then also defining, okay, what do I like and what do I not like, and having an opinion and why. Because I get into quite listening ruts where I just listen to the same stuff, and it was nice to listen way more intentionally and to things that I didn't that I hadn't heard before. And also just that reinforcing that our perspective, our likes and dislikes, they're valid, and to kind of really get comfortable with, like, no, I don't like that, or I want to try and make that texture somehow, or I really liked that part of it.
I noticed that so much with the students in the course, that seems to really strike a chord of this whole time I haven't been asking myself if I even like this, or what I even like, or what I don't like, and that if I don't like something, or I like something, or I'm just curious about something, or whatever it is, that's valid.
Exactly.
You know? And my opinion is as important as, you know, knowing what genre something's from, or knowing what time signature something's in. Your opinion is also important.
And there's things that I kind of I can't remember which song it was. It was FKA Twigs. There was one song we were listening to, and it was like, there were so many things in that I had a really strong feeling about that. I was like, wow, I love that. But it was like about one element, and then something else, I was like, I really don't like that element. And rather than just being like, oh, I'm kind of neutral about this song, like actually being like, you know, that's the thing that I really like, and that's the thing that I'm not so keen on. And like,
And that gives you such a confidence then, doesn't it? Because you're really starting to understand those textures and how things are fitting together, or how things don't fit together in the way that you would want to emulate in your music. And that's so important for that clarity. Okay, great. So that number one.
So that was only one thing. I think actually the perfectionism, there was a whole, printed out some of the sheets and stuff, and on the perfectionism one, I'd like circled it loads of times. there was that thing of perfectionism is the enemy of done, like that. I think that's the first time I've heard that, really. Like, I've kind of taken that in and taken it on board. And all the mindset things about perfectionism was really important. And that in relation, I think in the course, it was in relation to selecting takes, which I also found really helpful, like that there's a part of the perfectionism that is like a useful voice that's got information in it. And of like, okay, actually, is that my best? Like, can I do better than that? And separating out the different voices of within the perfectionist feeling. And then another thing was about defining success. And I think you said that, you know, like before you had put out an album of I'm not going to say it as well as you did, but before you put out an album, okay, what are you proud of? Like, even if no one hears it, like, what are you proud of before it, like deciding how you feel about it before it goes out, so you're not sort of wedded to people's opinions of it.
So important.
Yeah, that's been really, really helpful. Also, because as we're talking now, the album hasn't gone out, and I think I've done a lot of, I've had a lot of kind of conflicting ideas about what success is, and
totally.
Yeah, and yeah, defining it for myself is more as it's taken a while, but I think I'm getting there to be more happy with what I've done. And yeah, exactly. And also realizing
that's
the things
really good.
Yeah, and like the things I kind of imagined about external success, like having a track played on the radio or something. It's like I had this idea that it was this utterly like completely unattainable thing, and now seeing all the steps, it's like, okay, no, actually it's just if I'm scrolling social media and feeling jealous about, you know, not doing all the things I want to do, then yeah, it is unattainable. But if I just take every step, like, you know, they're quite humble steps, you know, like, and then you just end up doing something that you previously thought was like this really successful thing to do. And it's, I mean, just, I'm not like getting loads of, you know, I'm not massively successful in the external way, but when I have little tastes of that, I can kind of see that it's not this mysterious thing. It's just that, it's a natural progression of just keeping going when those difficult things happen.
I love the fact that you've taken on board that idea of thinking, what am I proud of about this project, irrespective of the external validation that may or may not come. And I'm curious, actually, Asha, if someone was to ask you, what are you proud of in this project? What would you tell them?
I'm proud that I did it myself. I'm proud that I produced, definitely that I produced it myself and the recording. I'm proud of that I played all the instruments myself, apart from the bass. I didn't play the bass. And I'm proud that I finally kind of finished something and finished a recording, and that I can kind of give it to people that I love, give it to my friends, and hopefully that it can touch people out there.
And I mean, one thing I just have to add as well is that I think you should be really proud of the fact that you've gone through something that was very difficult and very challenging, and you have made something that will definitely touch and help other people. And that's such an amazing thing to have done.
Oh, thank you.
So you should definitely be proud of that too.
Well,
thank you so much, Asha, for coming on the podcast. It's been wonderful to hear about Epitaph, the process, the story behind it, but also your journey in recording and production and perfectionism. I know that there'll be people listening who will have got so much from listening to your process and your relationship with all this stuff. And I know you will be a real inspiration for other women listening in, thinking that they can't do this or that they shouldn't even bother because they're just going to fail or it's not going to be right. And I think you've shown that when you're able to put those voices to one side, you can do some truly amazing things that are just so worthwhile putting that time and effort in.
Yeah, I see that. It's definitely also, I mean, we're on the female musician podcast, so it's definitely a gender thing as well, isn't it? I see a lot of men just like going for it and like have a go, and you know, like, and it's such, and I think we just don't have the same, we're not socialized in the same way to have that kind of self-belief. And but if we can just borrow that, like, and have a go, then it's there's so much on the other side of just having a go and keeping trying and not having to be perfect before we go for it.
Shared so many wise insights in this episode, especially about her struggles with perfectionism and self-doubt.
One of the things I loved is hearing her finding that fine balance between high standards and allowing a little sloppiness into the mix too. Being open to impulsive creativity while having a system that works for recording and production. It's having this balance that really makes the difference and helps you find your own pathway as an artist while still being grounded in best practice and quality. Epitaph really is a demonstration of all of this. I also loved hearing how Asha found the exercise of tuning into her likes and dislikes when it came to recording and production of other people's music, and how having this clarity and confidence helped her to make intentional decisions with her own work moving forward. It's so easy to get bogged down in self-doubt and other people's opinion, especially as a female artist, so finding spaces where you can truly develop your own voice is key. And if you loved hearing all the snippets of Asha's new album Epitaph that I've been splicing in here and there in this episode, and you want to hear more, check out the link to the album in the show notes. It really is such an incredibly beautiful, impressive piece of work that I will certainly be binging on repeat. Now, in next week's episode, I'm doing something I haven't done before, and that is give you a VIP backstage pass, behind-the-scenes sneak peek, at my digital course, Home Recording Academy. If you're a fan of the podcast, you'll have met a few of my student alumni now and may be curious as to what's the secret sauce inside that's helped hundreds of women embrace music technology and record their music on their terms. I'm going to be walking you through exactly what Home Recording Academy is, so what you'll find inside, all its 7 modules, exactly who it's made for and who probably isn't a great fit, and the tangible difference it has made to my students and their music. But till then, take care, and I'll catch you here soon. Girls Twiddling Knobs is hosted and produced by me, Isabel Anderson, with production support from Francesca O'Connor, and is a female DIY musician production. So, how'd you like that episode, dear listener? If you loved it, and you know someone else who would love it too, be a good friend and share it with them. Go on, spread the Girls Twiddling Knobs love.